David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Advisor. And today I'm so excited because we have a very special guest with us. It's Dr. Marcella Raimondo, and she is a wonderful person who has a lot of knowledge in a lot of different topics, especially when it comes to eating disorders. And today she's here to join us. We are privileged to have her on the show, and she's going to talk about eating disorders and other topics that are related to it and give us some great advice to help us with our daily lives and to make our lives better. So Dr. Marcella, tell us a little about yourself and what you do.
Oh, thank you, Stacey. I'm so excited to be here. Let's see. I'm a psychologist, as you introduced me, and I specialize with folks working with eating disorders. I also work with folks with body image distress too. And so folks who may not have an eating disorder, but just have this constant relationship with their body and tell me, I just want harmony with my body. I do a lot of trainings. So I go to mental health clinics to talk about eating disorders. Like I also go to schools and various settings. I'm a consultant and I work with folks that may be seeing a person with an eating disorder as a therapist or as a teacher or as a parent. And so so that's what I do as like just my passion, my work. But other things about me, I'm a martial artist. I am also a bunny lover. I volunteer at a bunny shelter every week. Makes me happy. They're cute, they're cuddly, they're funny. It's interesting. I ask this about with all my clients, and I think feel like I should like ask this to myself of like, what's important to me? What are my values? And so when someone says, tell me about yourself, it's like, well, some of my values are curiosity and kindness. And my big value is just community and the collective power that we can do and that we can harness to bring in people whom that we don't hear from, that need to be seen and heard. And these are like a lot of marginalized communities. Also, like we have a power as a community for change. And I feel especially important to say that now with so much happening in our world that feels very disharmonious. So I do hold on to that even when it feels hard.
Yeah. You talk about eating disorders, and that's something that so many people struggle from. And I find it, very important to address this topic because so many people are just struggling, whether it's something that happened from their childhood years, some traumatic event that occurred during their life. There's so many reasons, that we have, food disorders and we struggle tremendously. And sometimes it's just personal insecurities that we just don't like ourselves or don't like something about ourselves, or someone in our life might tell us that we're not good enough, we're not this, we're not that. And, what are some of the things that you see in our society that people struggle with food disorders? And maybe you can give some insight on how to, focus on overcoming food eating disorders, because people struggle so hard. And I know people who they go up and down, up and down. They lose 70, they gain 70. They lose 40, they gain 40. They struggle their entire lives just trying to go through their daily struggles in life, and they want to feel better, they want to look better, but they just have a hard time doing it. And what's some of your insights and thoughts about this?
Thank you for asking, and thank you for how you frame that. I feel it just what I held on to with what you said, Stacey, was a part of like, I'm not good enough. And I feel like if we can really just hone that and understand that, because there's so much people say when they're saying I'm not good enough, they're saying I am not valued, I'm unlovable, I deserve to be thrown away, I'm I deserve to be not treated well.
Yeah.
I don't like myself. And so when we like really hear that and know that like many of us, all of us like have dealt with that on some level,
yeah,
that helps us understand eating disorders more. Because what has been the hardest part for me, and it's gotten better in the, I would say in the past 5 years, but when I first started working in the field 15 years, I would have really what felt like strong arguments with people about who gets an eating disorder and who doesn't. And it was, yeah, it was this myth that only rich white girls get eating disorders. And it was like, no, other people do not get eating disorders. I know you're smiling like, okay, yeah. And the damage that has caused, of just like, well, absolutely not. We don't see this in our communities, or no, we, you know, men don't get eating disorders. I mean, just all these messages and this stereotype and this myth about who gets an eating disorder and who doesn't.
Yeah.
And because of that stereotype, a lot of damage and harm has been done, where a lot of people have not been diagnosed, have not been treated, and have had chronic eating disorders, even if they don't have a full blown, I'll call it medical risky eating disorder. That constant dieting, as you're like losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, that just sounds like a very unhappy, it is, it sounds like an unhappy life, and
yeah,
it is an unhappy life. So I think what I ask folks to first think about of an eating disorder is to think about like, who do you think gets one? And then ask folks like, can you be curious? Can you be ready to unlearn pretty much so much of what we think about eating disorders?
Yeah.
You know, we see all those after school specials of the very thin white person with an eating disorder, and it's usually focused on anorexia, and you see this kind of like this very emaciated mod person. And to point out more that a lot of people with eating disorders are not emaciated.
Yeah.
A lot of people with eating disorders are doing a lot of harm to their bodies and not realizing it. And so for us to really take a step back and realize, okay, who is getting an eating disorder? Who is not, or who do we think, and to look at all the ways we talk about food and bodies in our society. Yeah. And to note that while many times it started off very personally, we have a culture that really maintains and actually really encourages eating disorder behavior.
Yes.
And then all kinds of mixed messages around food and bodies, and speaks very disparagingly about aging. I mean, it's pretty relentless.
Yes.
And then kind of also like this other message of, and if you care about all these things, you're a shallow person. I'm like, okay, it must be. I do this sometimes. I was just thinking about like if an alien were watching planet Earth, they'd be like, it's, wow, human beings, how do they operate in that?
Yeah.
They get constant mixed messages about how to eat and live and be, yeah, in their bodies.
I think that's why so many aliens stay away from the United States and Earth, planet Earth.
Oh, they're like, this place is really messed up.
Yeah. I'm going to Platon, you know. Yeah, I don't blame them, you know. That's why we haven't seen any lately, because they said, I'm not going there. I do think that, you know, I think our society definitely gives a lot of mixed messages. You go into any restaurant, you know, we were talking about this briefly. You know, I went to a restaurant the other day to have lunch with a girlfriend. And the amount of food that they gave me, it was delicious, the food, but the portion size was for 3 meals. You know, I could take that, I could split that up into 3 days worth of lunches if I wanted to. But people do that in most restaurants all the time. And, you know, you have a lot of people that, you know, were brought up to eat everything on your plate, you know, don't leave anything over, you know, and that was the old generation speaking in our ears, you know.
Right.
And so many people, especially my parents, they, you know, and their grandparents, they were the first one. I used to hear the stories, they ran to the table because they came from big families. It was first come, first serve. And if there's any, and if you missed it, you lost it, you know? And so, you know, they constantly ate everything on their plate, you know, and, you know, we, you know, our parents are our mentors, our environment we live in, that's our mentor, you know, we follow the environment that we live in. And then people are used to eating large quantities of food. And, you know, you'll see people go into restaurants and there's huge amount of food on their plate and they'll clean it up, you know, almost to the end. And they don't, and the more you stretch your stomach, the more food you want. And then the faster you eat, you don't have time to digest it. So then you don't even realize that you're full. But, you know, and then, you know, we have people also that we were talking about that, you know, use it as a coping mechanism for comfort. So we have society right here, you know, enabling us to continue with our food eating disorder because they don't give us the proper portions. Yet, you know, Weight Watchers and many other companies will enforce proper proportions. But then you go to a restaurant, there is no proper proportions, you know? And so, you know, people who are not aware of proper proportions are just eating for enjoyment. They're eating, you know, it's a great way, you know, to, you know, feel good, you know, and it's exemplifying the wrong messages. And a lot of the food is packed with sugar, packed with salt, you know, different ingredients that makes you want more and more and more, you know. So we're kind of trapped in a society that's given a lot of mixed messages. It's telling us to eat healthy, it's telling us to be organic, but then you're getting a lot of food on the market food stores that are not good for you, that are doing the opposite for your health. And then you have restaurants that are giving you large proportions. And so you're battling, there's so many different things, especially if you have an eating disorder. How do you stay healthy? How do you accomplish, you know, overcoming that eating disorder? It's like being an alcoholic and working in a bar. You know, it's like, you know, how do you cope? How do you get through it when we are not really helping people who have eating disorders, and we're not helping people who want to stay thin. We are working against them in a sense.
Yeah, I will say our society when it comes to food, when it comes to food and capitalism and marketing, and food production is not about people's not about people's longevity, not about people having their bodies be at an optimal place in terms of health, in terms of thriving. Like, I believe in health at every size, and I believe like where a person's body lands is where that person's body lands. And with that being said, I agree in terms of how food is being marketed, how food is being produced, how can people access food, how can they not? There's a very manipulative message around food of saying like, first of all, you cannot be trusted to know what you want and need. You cannot be trusted to eat what is nourishing and I'll just say like appropriate for you, in terms of like knowing what your body needs. So it's this immediate message of you are not to be trusted. Yeah. And then the other messages around, the very manipulative messages around stay thin, and if you're not thin, it's all your fault. And in order to be thin, you have to engage in disordered eating practices. And then all the messages around food and the portions and how accessible it is to have, you know, the calorie dense foods, and how it just turns that around so much, in that, because all these foods were meant to be enjoyed and it's part of our lives, and eating for pleasure is a part of our lives. And yet looking at all the stresses in our society, coping with food is something people do in terms of, because it is what they have in front of them. So there is a lot of emotional eating in folks and people really struggling and suffering with that. And yet I have yet to meet someone who says like, I'm fine emotionally eating. People say I emotionally eat and this is also hard. And yet not being in a society where we have this relationship with food where we trust ourselves more and more, and we trust our society too as well of the foods that we are being served. We're given portions in restaurants where we feel like this is nice. One of my favorite memories when my partner and I went to Italy was just going to this like square, this piazza. Like it was evening, it was early evening or around 8-9 o'clock, and there were probably 50 people in the square kind of chatting and engaging with each other, and everybody had a cup of gelato. Mm-hmm. And I could tell it was part of that. I didn't pick up energy of like, oh my God, I'm having ice cream. I didn't see these big portions of ice cream, or not big, but like the kind of like what you see in the United States, what feels like this bowl. Everyone was just having their cup and enjoying it. And I could see like, and then people finished. And then people continued the conversation, or they left, and then new people came in, and it was just this flow. And it was like, we have ice cream at night. It's summer. It's nice, and it feels good. And I didn't hear like, oh, the calorie content in this, and et cetera. Yeah. And how many points do I can I? You know, it was just none of that. It was relaxed. It's like, this is what a society, and I'm not saying this is utopia and everything is perfect.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is like, there was a moment there that I was like, oh, this is what it is to be in a relaxed place with a bunch of people enjoying ice cream that clearly is considered very decadent, is very loaded in our society of like good foods, bad foods, as opposed to like, this is just pleasure.
Yeah.
This enjoyment with each other. And so I'm just kind of like breathing right now a bit, because like, wow, to have that. And to note like that comes with so much privilege, because in that piazza or square, I mean, that was a vacation place. And so people weren't worried about violence. There were so many factors in place to have that. And so you come to our United States and having to think about like, can people walk down the street and get ice cream? Like where? You know, some places you could, or as you're walking down, what are you surrounded by? And having to be really conscious about like, well, I want ice cream. You know, it's like, that's a lot of work. And living in a society where that may or may not be possible. You might have to drive to get ice cream. So there's, as you were talking, it's like, we don't live in a society where we are celebrating all of that, like the ice cream, as well as the farmer's market and what's in season right now, as well as trusting our food and knowing like food is produced for our health. It feels like what's in it, what are the ingredients? And so we get caught up into food labeling, which is very diet. And yet understanding that like, I don't trust a lot of our production about the food that is being made for us, because it is about profit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also see, even, you know, when we grew up around a media that consistently now talks about negative things, and we have placed a lot of fear into people's, you know, into people's minds, and people react off of fear. It gives great ratings on TV, but now we have behavior from individuals that are fearful of everything, you know, and they're skeptical of everything because fear brings skepticism, and then you're not trusty, and then you're not trusting towards people, and it's a very bad corrupting cycle, you know, where, you know, we should be shown more positivity, but it's the negativity that sells and makes ratings. But, you know, that itself is as harming people's minds and the way they think and the way they react. And I think that is very, very bad for us also. And for people with eating disorders and for people with, you know, trying to lose weight and people who are trying to be healthy, all these things, having all this negativity around us and all this fearfulness around us, I think even makes it more difficult, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As you were talking and talking about that kind of fear-based society that we live in, it's just, yeah, and we do. And given various realities for folks who are marginalized, folks who just don't have access and privilege to a lot of resources in society, you can see then when that starts to happen, and that kind of compounding effect of just more fear-based, more, you know, very harsh realities, like turning to food to cope makes sense. Turning to food to cope. I mean, the folks whom I work with, who share with me just some of their eating disorder behaviors, I mean, what they're also sharing with me is like my life is really hard, and I'm having trouble putting my life together. Not like, well, lift yourself up by your bootstraps, or come on, get disciplined. I mean, they're sharing that, like, these are my realities, this is how I am trying to live my life. I'm actually trying to put it together, but I just have a society stacked up against me over and over again, like a bureaucracy stacked against me over and over again. And they're telling me, like, I'm trying here. Can you imagine thinking, like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, so why aren't I getting this outcome given my efforts? And when that happens and that disharmony happens, of course someone's going to cope with food.
Yeah.
You know, I work with someone who is like, doesn't have a car, and so has to do all this public transportation, and everything keeps being stacked against her. And
one
thing she was saying was like, well, I did stop off at the drugstore and here's my binge food because I can't deal. And she goes, and I'm ashamed. And I'm like, it's okay. I'm here to work with you to find other coping mechanisms. But I hear you on like, I need something because things aren't working in my direction. And I've been told, and that's the other part of our American society, is like, well, if you work hard enough and do the right things, you will accomplish anything. And that's just so not true.
So not true. So not true. And, you know, to get back to eating disorders and coping with the problems in their life through using food as a comfort source, what are some of the things that you would suggest to people? I know everybody's different. Everybody comes from a different environment, different problems. But are there some tips that you can give people who are struggling on a day-to-day basis using food as a coping mechanism and are struggling because they don't want to feel like this? They don't want to resort to food as a way to cope, but they don't know any other way. You know, what are some of your suggestions to help people?
First I want to say, because there's so much shame that comes with that and a lot of isolation that comes with that, is like first and foremost, which I know sounds cliche, but I will say, like, first, you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
So many people struggle. What I also want to say is it's not your fault.
Right. But
I also want to say it's not because of you lack discipline, you're lazy, you're incompetent. So I want to give that message.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say, like, you are absolutely deserving of having a harmonious relationship with food, and you're mm-hmm. absolutely deserving to have a quality of life that is meaningful for you.
Right.
So I want to set that premise. And then ask folks, like it is a simultaneous of what in your life needs addressing. What are your needs right now in life? And maybe because of our society, it's hard. Maybe a society like you are doing the best you can and you're not getting your needs met, and that is hard. That is absolutely hard. So it's not because you're not trying hard enough. And so if folks can, so if folks can hear that, and then saying because your life is that hard, it makes sense that you're using food to cope. Absolutely. And if there are ways that you can start to bring in other coping, other ways to cope. It's not an easy switch. So I'm not saying just do this instead, but what I'm saying more is that, okay, sometimes you do use food to cope. Sometimes something happens and it's hard. Okay, you use food to cope. If there are other ways of saying like, I'm using food to cope. Can I do something else right now, instead? I'm using food to cope. I think folks also get caught up into when they overeat and then they feel like, well, I got to restrict now, as opposed to like what you can and if you have the time and space for it, is like, are you eating consistently? I mean, this is just, I'm getting really into nitty-gritty, but saying like, are you eating consistently, so that way when you feel the need to overeat, if you're eating consistently, your body does feel more nourished, as opposed to the what feels compensatory of like, oh, I overate, now I need to restrict. But then you're only setting yourself up to overeat again. And so, like, can you eat consistently during all this? If there are are there people in your life that you can talk to? There are various, and folks can go to my website in the resource section of, there are various support groups and online groups that are free. And so what starts to happen is, a lot of folks who really struggle with emotional eating disorders, all kinds of eating disorder behaviors, often do this in isolation and feel a lot of shame. And I want to encourage folks, like, the more you start to share your story on your terms of what feels comfortable sharing, the more we can start to bring down the shame aspect. And when that starts to happen, it won't also be this kind of what can feel very like a vicious trap of like, I'm really ashamed that I'm doing this, so I'm going to keep doing this. Oh, I'm so ashamed. And then you just pull away, as opposed to I'm struggling and other people are struggling, and it makes sense that you're using food to cope. And the more we can say I'm struggling, the more we can start to take away the shame aspect. The more shame gets brought down, the more chances of like, oh yeah, I use food to cope and I want to do something different. I use food to cope and it's okay, and I want to do something different. And folks share like, and I want to figure out a way to have a quality of life that is meaningful for me. And there are a lot of hard things in society right now.
Yes, for sure, 100%. And I find when a lot of people they try to eat it, when no one sees them, oh, I'm not very hungry, I'm not very hungry. And then later on in the middle of the night when no one knows, they're going for food and they're overeating because they starve themselves the whole day long. Or you have people who are, just struggling on a day-to-day basis. I think it's really important, and you made a good point is to get help, to figure out the root cause of why you're using food to cope with the stresses in your life. What stresses are causing you to overeat? Why are you overeating? Why are you using food as a comfort zone? And then figure out, once you figure out what the causes are, to get help and to try to overcome it.
it seems like, you know, verbalizing it to someone can really help, you know, expressing your emotions. And I feel sometimes we repress a lot of emotions in society. A lot of times we were always taught to, you know, to be strong, to be tough, especially men, you know, don't let people know, you know, your weaknesses. And then people repress their emotions, or they just don't know how to communicate well. And all those emotions become worse. You know, they don't go away. It just worsens inside of you. And sometimes people become numb and they don't even know how they feel anymore. And, you know, I feel like you mentioned getting support, getting professional help is great. Are there any other tactics, any other strategies that people can do at home to also help them, you know, in their process of overcoming a food disorder?
I would say, like, maybe folks are like, I don't want to join a group right now, or that's too much for me. That's hard. Then I would say, listen to a few podcasts of people sharing. And again, my website has a whole list of podcasts. Just to start to hear other voices. Start to hear other perspectives, just to start to hear, like, in many ways around diet culture and how we're supposed to be disciplined with food. And I use these, like, this kind of white knuckling, because I feel like that's the message we get. That you might start to realize, like, oh, we've been kind of not given a great message around food. We've been kind of duped, actually, when it comes to our relationship with food and weight and our bodies. So I would, you know, start to suggest that. One of my favorite activists, Sonia Renee Taylor, she started The Body Is Not an Apology. She talks so much around, like, body image and how, like, remember when you were a baby and how fascinated babies are with their bodies and themselves, and having this image of, remember the first time a baby realized they had toes and they stuck their foot in their mouth and chewed, because, like, what is this, a foot? So, and it's that reminder of, like, you once had that relationship with yourself and your body, and even that relationship with food. And so if you could hold on to that and know, like, that was there once, and it might feel like that's been completely eroded and it's gone and it's been taken away. It's like, well, it's been chipped at. It's definitely been wrecked, but it's never been gone, because you, and you're not gone. And so it means, like, how do I come back to that? Or just be moving in that direction when it can feel so hopeless.
100%. That's great advice. Cause I feel like sometimes, well, many times, you know, people think that they're all alone in it. You know, they feel, you know, that they're alone. Nobody knows what they're feeling. And in retrospect, there's millions of people that are going through what they're going through, and all they have to do is just vocalize it and reach out, and they can, you know, meet somebody. And your stories don't have to be the same. One little thing in someone else's story that you could relate to, and it's amazing the changes and the positive things that can come out of that too. You know, and sometimes it just by listening, like you said, to other podcasts, you know, it could make a light bulb go off, because sometimes people have solutions that we didn't even think of, you know, ourselves, and they can guide you in the right direction. You know, help is always out there. I think we just have to, you know, be willing to receive it and not be in denial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, if you had to take what we talked about today and you wanted to emphasize on a couple of important factors, what are some things you'd like to emphasize to the listeners that you feel are important, the things that you really wanted to get across today in your message?
I think, let's see, and I'm trying to narrow it down, but...
It's okay. You can mention as many as you want.
One is that, you know, eating disorders are far more common than we think they are. Particularly if if you're concerned about a loved one, in that, and also we associate a lot of eating disorders around around weight and this mindset of like, well, they're not that thin, so they're okay if they have an eating disorder. And to say that the weight factor is just one part of an eating disorder. And so if you are noticing, particularly with young ones, that you're noticing a degree of withdrawal, of pulling away, check in around behaviors, check in around eating disorders. So just kind of that mindset, and asking folks like, are you ready? And hopefully yes, ready to unlearn this kind of myth of who we think gets an eating disorder.
Yeah.
So that is the one takeaway I want to give folks. I also want to give folks too that there is a lot of help available. The pandemic has created a lot more online options for folks, and so there's more help available than ever for folks who are struggling with all kinds of eating disorders. So I just want to like relay that. Want to relay that diet culture is a serious thing, and diet culture doesn't so much care about your health. And so what we've been sold about weight and health are not true, in that health is important, but to feel like health and weight go hand in hand, it's like absolutely not true, and that there are ways to be healthy that don't involve losing weight. There are so many aspects of what you can do for your health. So I just want to relay that. I also want to ask folks too of like who are like not relentless, but like really struggling, being like, I want to lose weight. And ask folks like, what are you hoping what will happen for you if you lose weight? And folks share like, well, I want inclusion, I want attention, I want opportunity, I want love and respect. And I want to say like, all those things are yeses. And of course you want all those things. That is about belonging and being part of a community. Of course you do. But weight loss is not going to give you those things. It'll give it to you temporarily, perhaps.
Yeah.
But there'll always be this pressure, because if and when you gain the weight back, you're out. So, you know, and folks share like, well, I want that for a little bit just a little bit of my life to have that, and say like, okay, but is it worth it then to have that and to have that be taken away from you? Because I share with folks like, pursuing health, absolutely. And I ask folks, and many times when I'm working with other medical providers, and there's this focus on weight loss, I'll ask like, but what if a person were to make some changes in their lives? You know, they were to eat with people, they were to bring in more, we'll call it like fruits and vegetables, they got into movement, they were able to be more flexible, they had energy, they were sleeping better, their cholesterol and hypertension went down, they had more, did I say they had more energy, and they mm-hmm. were just, but they didn't lose weight.
Yeah.
It's like, is it all not worth it then? And so I just really want to ask that, like, what if you did all those things, but your body was like, this is where I want to be. Would you say then this is all not worth it? And of course, according to diet culture, the answer would be yes, because you didn't lose weight. So it's like important for us to think about like, wow, diet culture really doesn't have good values if we're doing all these things to take care of ourselves.
And that's a good point, you know, because, you know, even for myself, like I have, you know, when I started going through menopause, I gained a few pounds. So, you know, I was like, I was so
I was so I was so determined to lose those pounds. Like I didn't like the way I looked, you know, it went onto my belly. And no matter how hard I tried, I always stayed within that certain plateau. Go up a few pounds, go down a few pounds, go up a few downs, go down a few pounds. But I ate healthy. I did, you know, I exercised, I did everything I was supposed to. I was feeling good, but could not get rid of those pounds for I can't for any for shit. I couldn't get rid of it. I was like, you know, so and I got so frustrated, but I was in good health. And I guarantee you, especially as you get older and you go through menopause, women and men go through menopause, you know, they have, you know, and you know, you get to that point where your body isn't burning the fat or it might be comfortable where it is and say, hey, this is where we're supposed to be at, you know, and but the way society tells us it's the opposite, you know. So I think you make a really good point there.
Right. And like, it's fascinating for me, because I'm 53 and I've never received so many ads around menopause. And what's behind the ads, like it's so mixed and very conflicted of, you know, like so much about like the weight gain, the weight gain, the weight gain. And like, okay. But then it's these mixed messages around like, you know, because there are other factors with menopause. And I feel like there's so much on weight gain and so much around taking all these medications for weight gain, like, but there are other factors that come with menopause and why can't we focus on that in terms of, you know, brain fog and sleep and sexuality,
mood changes
fatigue. And I feel like we're telling folks like, well, just bear those, but lose weight. We don't care about the things, but lose weight. I'm like, well, I care about the other things. And he's going to do what my body's going to do. And so like, if we're putting so much energy and resources into menopause weight, which I find very I find very negative. But we're not putting we're not putting as enough resources into energy and sexuality, where people are talking about like my sex drive has changed. It's painful having sex. I'm like, what about women's sexuality and still trying to like claim that? So I find that kind of I find the message is still damaging, and that it still continues to focus on weight and appearance, as opposed to there are other changes in the body too. And if we help women sleep better, feel better, have their, you know, being able to enjoy sex, like,
yes,
that would help a lot.
Oh, 100%. When I did a talk about women, and I mentioned about menopause, and I started mentioning about the symptoms, no one talked about weight gain. It was all the other symptoms that people were talking about. That's what they were interested in. You know, all the things that you just mentioned, that's what they were interested in, because those are the things that really stuck out to them. They didn't want to feel fatigue. They didn't want to feel foggy. They didn't want to feel, you know, have the mood swings. And they noticed that, you know, one minute they were happy and the next minute they were like a raging bull. You know, they didn't want to feel like that. You know, they wanted more control over their body. When they had intercourse, they wanted to not be painful, and they wanted their sex drive back too, you know. So there was a lot of other issues that were more important to a woman, you know, than just a few pounds.
Right. Absolutely. And why isn't that being embraced and talked about, or feeling like, well, just grin and bear it, or it's okay if you don't have sex anymore? I'm like, no, it isn't.
No.
Or if you have sex, just kind of deal. I'm like, no, I want to like sex.
Yeah, you know. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know? You know, you're not doing it for a job. You're doing it for pleasure, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's what you want to focus on. Yeah. And I think those are issues. I think people have to really get their priorities in line. What's important to them, I think. And, you know, and focus on if you're using food as a coping mechanism and you're not able to cope with life, and you're using food as a way
then those are the things that you want to focus on. You know, you want to, you know, you want to reach out and get the help and overcome it, you know, but they're, when people are going through menopause and they're going through certain situations, they have to really think about what's really important, you know? And like you said, you know, our society with diet and culture, you know, it's not so much about a few pounds. It's how we feel as a person. If we're feeling, if we've gained a few pounds, but we're taking care of ourselves and we feel great, that's what matters.
Yeah. Yeah. And folks want help and folks seek help. And what I also want to share, is that, it's, unraveling your relationship with food and wanting to rebuild it. Does require patience and does require time. And many times you'll feel worse before you feel better because
100%.
All that pain. And so saying for folks like, you know, work with someone you feel a fit with, but also knowing like it's as liberating as doing that work is going to be, it's also going to be painful.
Yeah.
And there's no strict formula with that. Folks like, I want structure. I tell me what to do. And I'm like, it doesn't work that way. I'm like, we'll find, you know, a path, but it isn't like formulaic. a path. And releasing pain, the only way is to go, as we know, is like we have to go through it and we have to feel it. And that's where I say it gets worse before it gets better, because that means we have to feel the pain. And how do we work on having, you know, a container and a space for that as you move forward. Because I do want to acknowledge, like folks like share, like this is a painful relationship that I have with food. I'm like, of course it is. Of course it is. It's very painful because it's so primal. And it's like our one of our very first relationships we've ever had is with food.
Yeah.
So to try to come back to that does involve releasing pain. And so I want to like tell folks that, please don't like shy away. We feel like if you started with this and explore and realize this is incredibly painful, it's like, yes, it is incredibly painful. Yeah. There's no strict formula about it. Because it's about you trusting yourself again. Mm-hmm. And there are so many folks that want to do this work with you. There are folks there that want to hold this pain for you as you move forward.
And I have to agree with you, because even when I was going through something, I reached out for help, and it's like an umbrella effect where you start, it's baby steps, and then you really face your pain. You face the situation, and it is painful. But then once you face the reasons, you face the pain, and you start to overcome it. It's like a freeing experience. It's like a wonderful feeling. Like, cause once you go through that painful effect and you deal with those emotions that are causing you pain and you overcome that pain, it's like afterwards, it's like you can see the end of the rainbow, you know. It's a wonderful feeling, but it takes a lot of work, and you will have a painful experience because you're facing all the things inside you that are causing you pain to react the way you are, you know. And but then once you overcome it, it's like a wonderful freeing, you know, feeling, you know, and you can move forward in life. And that's what the whole thing, even about eating disorders, is that you want to figure out what's causing it. You want to face the pain that you feel inside, and then you want to overcome it so you can move forward and have a healthy, happy, and productive life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so what are some of the services that you provide?
I provide, like, for folks in the state of California, I am licensed in California, and I see folks individually to address their relationship with food and their bodies. Also, I provide trainings for folks for schools and for healthcare settings and for mental health clinics and various community organizations around eating disorders as well as body image issues and how when folks are working, let's say, in a mental health clinic and have clients coming in and saying, we need some structure on addressing eating disorders. I provide that. I also have a newsletter that comes out a few times a year. And so folks can come to my website and then click on there's a sign up sheet. And I address various aspects of diet culture and eating disorders in my newsletter. I also provide consultation for folks, whether it's a teacher or a therapist or a parent, and who are saying, I'm working with someone and I feel like they have an eating disorder. And I need some consultation on how to work with this person. And so I also provide that as well. And so.
Now, do you do anything online? Like, do you have any consultations with people online or any coaching online?
Yes, all of this can be in person or online. And so I even like the trainings that I do, they're either in person or online. And so I remember during the pandemic, I was doing like it was like 1 week where I was like, this is so trippy of because it was three trainings in 1 week. And one day I did a training for a mental health clinic based in San Francisco. Literally the next day it was Texas. And the next day it was in Canada. And I was like, wow, I am all over the place, but like, and I loved it, but I remember
Yeah.
like, wow, I'm kind of traveling the world in my online training right now. But it was so that is one thing that while I love doing in-person training because I'm able to be in the room and all. I've done like so many online trainings
Yeah.
and so I've been doing that from particularly since 2020. Because of the pandemic, like it's been
Yeah.
online. So I've been doing it for now the online trainings for 4 years now. So I've gotten the little system down, like, all right, worked out the kinks of like this is how to make it more interactive, more engaging. And so yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, where can people find you? What website?
You can come to my website at www. Marcella ED as in eating disorders training.com, and there you'll see all my services there. I also want to note that I offer free 15 minutes consultation on anything from whether I want to talk about a training with you. I just have this quick question about a client. Can I talk to you about that? I'm like, absolutely. Or I'm kind of deciding if I where I need to go for myself and my personal journey. Can I talk to you for just 15 minutes? I'm trying to figure this out. And so I want to say like yes to all that. And so because sometimes you just need like, look, I just need some thoughts. And so or I'm trying to figure out what to do. Can I just have 15 minutes just to kind of chat with you? I'm like,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Oh, that's wonderful. So we'll put that in the description
My
box.
gift. Yes.
What?
I said, that's my gift to
I
folks.
like that. I'll put that in the description box so everybody can know where to contact you for the consultation, and your website address will be in our description. And this has been amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Marcella, for coming on the show. This is something that's so important, and we have so many people who inquire us about eating disorders and how to overcome it. So today was wonderful because you provided such great information that I think will be very beneficial to many of the listeners out there. So I just want to say thank you for taking the time to share this information and to help others. So I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you, Stacey. It's been great interacting with you and loving. I just really loved our conversation and the questions you asked. So thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you so much. And you have a great day.
You too.